Who'd he go in with?
South Vietnamese.
Oh, my God. They did get some training. They couldn't put their boots on before, in the opinion of the North. Now they're with Nixon driving into Cambodia. Now they only go 31 miles, they come out again. But Hanoi is really now debating again. What's next? What's next? 1970, November, Son Tay raid. We don't get the prisoners back. Oh, no, but we land 25 miles west of Hanoi. Imagine World War II. And they say, your mission is, if you choose to accept it, land 25 miles west of Tokyo in the middle of the war in 1943 and get the prisoners out. Sir, that's going to be a little tense. Look, it can be done. Now, the remarkable thing is it was done. We landed, found no one. By the way, when we landed, some of the group landed at the wrong place. General Manner can tell you this much more than I can, but PBS didn't mention this. We landed at the wrong place, and 250 very large individuals, bigger than Bernie Yo, very large individuals, came running out of a barracks in the middle of the night into the fire of these Americans who had landed in the wrong place, and we killed 250 individuals. Because they were in their pajamas, and we were, you know, in their shorts, and we were attacking. They weren't Vietnamese. If they were Russian, the Russians never said a thing. But it's a deep suspicion, because of some artifacts that were collected, that they were Chinese. There was no Chinese protest. Instead, if you went behind the scenes at that time, China was approaching us, and we were approaching them in such unlikely places as Poland and Holland. You know, after Cambodia, well, we couldn't get too close to them for a while. They ran down a hallway away from the ambassadorial. You'll see some of this recounted in the Kissinger book. What I'm saying is that in this whole element, it was China and the Soviet Union, and their quarrel was picking up, and Hanoi was beginning to lose its priority, and they knew it. And still, peace now, peace now, peace now. And the peace delegation flew in regularly. And they literally laid the calendar out on the table and said, well, we'll do this, here's our record, here's our timing. It was interesting. It was very interesting. But you see, when you came to the impact of Hanoi, China had a message. Hello there, Hanoi. Remember I told you to negotiate Nixon out? You didn't do it, right? He went into Cambodia, right? Huh? Now he just landed 25 miles west of Hanoi to get his prisoners. And he didn't get them. But the next time he lands, he may get you, all nine of you Politburo members, and take you back to Southern California. You are clods and clowns for fighting this war this way. Negotiate before he gets a chance to do more damage. We're going to take South Vietnam by liberation method. And the North goes into 1971. And 1971 is crucial. PBS doesn't mention this. There's the Lao operation. They talk about that. They say, well, that was a rout. That was a terrible performance at Lung Sum. Wrong. The Vietnamese went into the Ho Chi Minh Trail. The American advisor said, now look, one thing, when you go in, don't sit down. Keep moving. This whole thing is, we won't be with you. We'll be watching you through strong glasses. We have helicopters, we have artillery, but we won't be with you. Move. They sat on 16 trails, 41 days. And on the 41st day, they came out with television. They're right there. They were filming the greasing of the helicopter skids as the South Vietnamese soldiers attempted to hang on in what was obviously a disorderly rout getting out of Laos. On the 41st day, crew members, because the helicopter's overburdened, are putting grease on the skids, and the South Vietnamese hands are falling off the helicopters. And Senator Ted Kennedy says, and that's Vietnamization. He didn't say that the Arvin had done anything credible in the 41 days, but China did. China flew Cho En Lai to Hanoi. And he said, you know, it should have taken 4 days, shouldn't it? But it took 41. Bye-bye, Hanoi. Our PX is closed for repairs. Now, you know, Hanoi says, like many people say about the Conservative Party in the United States, hey, if they get angry at a policy, where can they go? They're really already on the right side of the issue. They can't go left. 3 months later, China invited Dr. Kissinger by playing ping pong with a pickup American auto firm's traveling ping pong team in Tokyo. They sent the signal, come on and see us, we're ready to talk. This was outrageously important. It didn't get mentioned in the PBS series in that context. China inviting Kissinger. Kissinger goes, Kissinger comes back, Nixon says in July, Dr. Kissinger's been in China and I'm going to China next February. And the immediate newspaper coverage here, because they had the genesis of this problem here, Mr. Nixon is trying to take some attention away from the failure of the price control situation in the United States. Yeah, but Moscow didn't react that way. Moscow did two things. They sent all of their assets, messages in China. Can you kill Mao? If you can kill Mao now. I don't know whether they could get many assets, but they tried. Podgorny, the president of the Soviet Union, flew into Hanoi in October. He said, listen, North Vietnamese, remember you said you wanted a big offensive next year. We said, be modest, be calm. Things are working well. Don't excite the Americans. They're on the losing slope. They're withdrawing troops by the numbers. Don't excite them. But it was really true that at that moment, Podgorny said, we want to give you everything you need. You must have a major offensive next year. It must be the biggest offensive you've ever dreamed of. There'll only be 69,000 Americans there. And then he added, in this sense, and even you can handle 69,000 Americans. You've fought for all these years. You've lost 500,000 killed in action. That's 7 million American dead, by the way, if you take a portion of our population. You held nothing and you hold nothing today, but we're with you. We're with you all the way. So even you can handle 69,000 Americans because we're giving you 800 tanks. And that should balance the scales. The Americans won't be able to compete. It'll only be Arvin, you know, their hopeless puppets. So 800 tanks and we'll send 1,000 of your army to Odessa Tank School. And that'll give a little edge, too, because they'll understand how to drive them. And then you can drive them down to South Vietnam, and you must drive them in, drive the Americans into the sea before Mr. Nixon lands in Peking. Got it? No visit to Mao. Not now. Okay, that PBS doesn't cover this. Now, Nixon goes to Peking. Moscow's waiting. I should hear the sound of tanks any minute. I'm sure there's not going to be a communique coming out of Peking. I mean, I don't even think Nixon will get past the airport. He'll have to handle a Dunkirk in South Vietnam. There is no Dunkirk in South Vietnam. The North Vietnamese are off schedule. Now I conjecture. I speak today personally. In this entire presentation, I'm not representing any government agency. I'm a taxpayer. I'm a father. I have my son over here and my foster son over here. My point is, I believe General Lavelle, changed history. General Lavelle, Jack Lavelle, lied about the bombing of North Vietnam. You realize this is all bombing halt time. 68, North Vietnam's at peace, it stays at peace till 72, we're now in 70, 71. General Lavelle saw the buildup. He saw the buildup and he said to his pilots, go bomb it. And the pilots said, sir, the orders are, can't bomb unless they shoot at us. And he says, weren't you shot at? No, I wasn't, sir. Well, get shot at. Bomb them. General Lavelle carried out 28 illegal raids against those build-up points, and I believe he knocked them off schedule. I believe that's why they failed to get in on time. I know I can't prove it, but I just believe that that man who was pilloried in the Congress and demoted and all the rest is a hero. Okay. He did the human thing. He knew he was leaving South Vietnam, and he didn't want to leave behind that great build-up, that great accretion. Very different from the settlement we made at Paris, where we left the North Vietnamese army in South Vietnam, the most disgraceful part of the peace ceasefire settlement. When they fall behind, the North Vietnamese have another problem. They're no longer trusted as general staff in their own political system as producing anything. So they've been told, you're going to have one more offensive. We got 800 tanks. We got 1,000 tank crew drivers trained. And you're going to have one more offensive, and it's going to be win. And if you don't win, we're going to sign. See? We'll sign a victory, or we'll sign a ceasefire, but by God, we're going to sign. So they're on a short leash, and they can't help it. And when they fall off schedule, they now are going to attack any time they are ready. And what happens? Nixon comes home, reports to Congress, I've been to China, hello there. I have a Mao Tai hangover, a Mai Tai hangover. And I now am going to Moscow, because Russia said please come. Soviet Union said please come to Moscow. You talked to the rug merchant in Peking, now please come to Moscow. PBS missed this story. When we went to Moscow, we sent an advance to Moscow to work out details, and suddenly, incredibly, while we're planning to go, Russian tanks start to invade South Vietnam. Can you believe now the consternation that breaks out in Moscow? Let me get it straight. We're going to have Nixon for dinner, and Russian tanks are going to destroy his visit, and are used by North Vietnamese, who let him go to Mao? That's it. That's it. And that was it. And we got to Moscow, and the Soviets gave us the denunciations. PBS picked that up. But they didn't note or pay any attention or try to find out about the fact that it was just denunciation. What happened is we bombed and mined Haiphong Harbor. We sank a Russian ship in Haiphong Harbor with a bomb going right down the funnel. Russia did not protest. The Soviet Union said not one word. Why? Come to Moscow. Right? PBS missed the total import of that because that was the next PX closing on Hanoi. Now, why did Hanoi sign the ceasefire? Because they said, I guess it's time to sign the ceasefire. Of course, it took the Christmas bombing. Oh, yes, there's one other thing. North Vietnam knew from the beginning to the end that we were dumb. They just knew we were dumb. Americans are great people, 200 years old. Have two baseball teams play in October, think that's a World Series. They're wonderful people. Humility's not their long suit, but they're wonderful people. But they're like children. So when we negotiate with them, let's say we give it away in English. Let's say we concede. And in Vietnamese translation, let's take it back. They'll never read the Vietnamese translation. And we caught them at it. We caught them at it. That was part of the impasse that brought that deadlock that ended up in the Christmas bombing. Oh, yes, one other thing. By this time in Hanoi, you had mothers standing in silent vigil, 1971, in silent vigil, outside the Veterans Administration and the Defense Ministry saying, where's my son going to get replaced as a job-holding member of this society? Madam Hop. The joke on Ho Chi Minh Trail is General Zop's army stronger than Madam Hop's army? Because she's got the mothers and they're protesting. Then there was a short story, and it said, waiting on a rainy afternoon for a train. And the short story debated whether to answer the call to go to the army. That was 1971. Now it's 72. The big invasion is on. They send asthmatics. They send 4F. They send 22 divisions. They send everybody to the South. The North now knows why it's being bombed. We've been at peace since 68. We just attacked the South. We're being bombed again. I think I begin to understand this. And the B-52s rolled in, and the prisoners came home, and we had that settlement. Now, PBS missed all this drama. Now, let's forget our feelings on the idea of what side we were on the war. Isn't it a hell of a good story to sell newspapers and make television listeners sit up and say, man, is that complicated. That's the real world. There are no heroes and villains that way. There's a record of history of human beings interacting on this planet, and this was an involvement with a political revolutionary warfare thing. If we don't get that knowledge, and thank God for AIM, because AIM has called together a conference of minds that represent encyclopedias on each area of this, and because AIM exists today, there's going to be in the record of this conference the ability to produce a book that stands right there beside Carnot and says, hey, you want the other side of the story? Here it is. There are tapes, and there are your personal dedications to carry this word, and of course there's Reed Irvine, and there's Murray Barron, and that means we're going to reach America one way or the other. But do you see what they left out? And do you see how exciting it is and how it must have hurt their mercenary souls to know that this would be even a better story, but they are committed. Not all, but some members of the media are committed to say, if that would be true, then a lot of other things I wrote weren't true and I'm a star. All we're asking for is you to realize that the Vietnam War ended as it began, a Greek tragedy, a true Greek tragedy. Only it was a Vietnamese tragedy. Now, all over the world, people say, no more Vietnams. Now do you know what I mean when I can put my bumper sticker on the car and say, no more Vietnams, no more such ignorance, no more such naivety, no more such failure to adjust to a political revolutionary warfare? And then they say, well, now we have trouble in our hemisphere. We do. We really do. Moscow's involved, Cuba's involved, Nicaragua's involved. But what's the challenge here? It's to go in and find the elements of the story and the background of the story and go to the roots of the story. And we've got to do it. And we've been warned, we've been forewarned, we've been equipped, we've been enlightened in this session for this conference. And as I've tried to portray, the kinds of things that happened in North Vietnam after 69 paralleled what happened here in their own way. They had the hippies, they had the protests, they had the dissent. Oh yes, one final statement. They ran a party analysis of the effect of the American bombing. And here's what they found. It corrupted the villages. In terms of Communist Party cadre who were not in touch with the capital, who went corrupt, sold their services, went on the take and the bribe. And they said, aha, these are Machiavellian Americans. That's why they bombed us that way. No, that was a byproduct, an accidental outcome. But it is true, we were at war with a Communist Party. Can you analyze it again now if you're a general? If you're an Air Force commander, general, your job is to cripple the Communist Party of North Vietnam. If you do that, they will change. If you don't do that, they see no reason to change. That's going to have to be part of the education we bring out of this incident, this in history, that we involved ourselves with called Vietnam. And it merely says to you, these are not indecipherable things. These are not inscrutable things. They were so plain and so obvious. And everything I've told you, I said all over the country. I close with this. I tried to get on the networks. I couldn't get on the networks. Finally, somebody said, you know, this guy sings. I said, you're kidding. No, he does. And a guy wrote a story in the Wall Street Journal. Move over, Joan Baez, folk singer in the White House, not from the left. I wrote a song about the prisoners of war because I thought we ought to have one. And then I got all this coverage, and ABC, NBC, and CBS came to Indianapolis, to a little suburb of Indianapolis, to descend on a surprise JC or Rotarian director of that honors night, and I was there to give a talk. The networks arrived, and they said, we understand you're a singer. I said, well, I brought a guitar. Yes, well, we want to film you. Well, be my guest. And they filmed me 1 hour, and I talked 1 hour. I was much kinder to that audience than I'd been to you. And at the end of 1 hour, I sang one song. Nelson Benton, Stephen Geer, ABC, NBC, CBS, they were all excited. The cameramen were most excited. By the way, cameramen are hawks. I don't know if you know that, but they're just hawks. They take in so much stuff. Wow, this is great stuff. They all went back to their networks, and they said at the networks, you know, we got the story, and the producer said, got the songs? Yeah, but we got an hour of stuff we never heard before. This is really something. This is 4,000 years of history, and you can't believe this story. It's incredibly interesting. And the producer said, damn it, I sent you out. I sent you out for a singer. Did you get a singer? Yeah, he sang one song. He had an hour introduction to one song? Yeah. What happened on the networks that night on CBS and ABC and NBC? Well, I don't think NBC ran anything, but on the network CBS and ABC. And now, as we come to the final story in the news, a real quirk. They pronounce it carefully. A real quirk. A folk singer in the White House. And they cut it right back to a minute and 34 seconds of me singing Don't Forget the Eagles, which was the prisoner of war song. In other words, on the files, in the files, somewhere in the archives is everything I've just told you, but in greater detail of chronology, and they weren't interested. Now that's the networks, because it would undo everything else the networks had set up to that time, right? But the reporters were honest. Ooh, that's interesting stuff. We're going to burn the North Vietnamese flag on the Capitol Hill steps of the Congress, because it was a Hue massacre we were commemorating. And in that song, I said, I wrote it Friday, and they carried out the burning the next day. And I said, sing the song as you burn the flag and give the background of the Hue massacre. 3,000 people died in the Hue massacre, and call it to their attention. That's North Vietnamese policy. North Vietnam, by the way, said that was no atrocity, that was a collection of blood debts. They were very open in their broadcasts. So the song went this way, and it's just one phrase of the song. They killed school teachers and politicians too. They killed intellectuals and people just like you. They killed those in politics with whom they had to compete. They killed from a list, and the list it was complete. For the sake of the future, hear the voices of the dead. Strangulation, live burial, or a bullet in the head. And remember, dear neighbor, if now you turn and run, then the future will be written by the executioner's gun. And that got on the network.
Dolph, what did I say? What can I say? You know, Dolph is only a half hour over, but how can you stop Dolph Gross? It's as fast as... No. Thank you, Dolph. It was tremendous. As fast as we can, make our necessary pit stops, and let's get down for the next meeting. Thank you a million, Dolph. It was great.
Thank you very much. You gave such a great one on Ann Locke. That's the Stalingrad. That's the siege of all things.
Is this written somewhere?
It's on the tape.
Thank you, Bruce. You got it.
You
got it.
You know who burned the flag?
You guys. I'm sorry. I should have been. I'm not. I'm sorry. Thank you.
No.
I'd like to see them on the same flag. I'd like to see you and Jesse on the same flag.